I don't understand what's going on here. E-F-E-S.
This is G3.
All you need is the knowledge.
Let's go!
It's G3, Games, Gadgets and Gizmos on BFBS Radio 2. And this month, for the month of August, we're going on the road. We're going to look at some green things to start with, and then I guess whatever the opposite of green is, we'll finish with something probably black as we look at a wedding limousine tank, how to make your own biodiesel. But we start with Electruck. And they are electric vehicles which actually are not cars, but in fact in working vehicles. And I'm with David Cormack, who is of Electruck. They seem very new to me. How long have they been available in the UK?
They've been on the market for 3 years. They've recently had a revised version that hit the market just before Christmas. And that's really drawing people into the light commercial market. The new vehicle is very different from the old one.
The usual idea behind an electric vehicle, the cars that we've had around, has been a rather staid and not particularly robust type of vehicle. But these, obviously, looking at the designs you have, can do an awful lot more and therefore must be much tougher made, are they?
Yes, they are. They are designed for an industrial application. They can take half a ton. They have the ability to take two men and a selection of tools in the back and are used in some quite arduous applications.
The range covers from garden design to picking up rubbish to even the ones with sort of like a cherry picker on the top. Mm-hmm. And are they each one individually made or is it part of a range, so to speak?
You can have them modified to whatever application you see fit, but there is a standard range, and they come in a van, pickup, and a drop-side vehicle, which are used regularly in gardens and that type of thing. But more and more, we're being asked for some very unusual applications, and we're being drawn into things. We have the first green hearse, for example, that's running around London, which is a revolutionary idea, and I think one that's going to take off in London, to be honest with you.
Now, to me, they weren't that large, so is it quite a small hearse, therefore?
It's a small hearse. It has a modified chassis that will take a full-size coffin, but yes.
Which has been the most popular of the designs you have?
The standard van, the standard white van, the green van is the one that's being taken into the London market. They're used in a very wide variety of different applications, from catering through to waste removal, through to drains inspection on the airport at Heathrow. So it's a very wide variety of different applications for one style of van.
For those who aren't aware, London, its congestion charge is free to electric vehicles, which means, therefore, and also parking is also free for some things as well, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It's free parking, free charging in a lot of boroughs now. They're starting to introduce charging points where you swipe on with a smart card and you can charge up free of charge. It's also road tax is free. Mm-hmm. And so all in all, that makes very good sense. In fact, they're almost cost neutral now in London. You can kind of drive a vehicle for nothing, which is amazing.
Which as well as being good for the environment as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What sort of range, you mentioned the charging points, what sort of range do these vehicles have? Because the definition usually of a little working vehicle in London is it does lots and lots of miles.
Mm. We can get 60 miles out of one of these vehicles on a good run around London, but it very much depends on the traffic on that day. We average 40. That includes all the stop-start that you'd expect in London. But 60 has been achieved, and we recently ran in a fuel challenge in London, a city fuel challenge sponsored by the Mayor of London, and we managed to get 60 miles out of the vehicle there on a good run around London. So and came out on top out of all the green vehicles that were around London on the day. So, yeah, that was quite a mission, really.
And how much does the payload, the amount of payload, reduce the amount of miles? Does it have a large...
It's not. It's actually, unusually, it has very little bearing. It's given a 500 kg capacity. It has very little reduction in journey. So once you're fully loaded up, you'll still get the 40 miles that we suggest around London, which is pretty amazing.
And you mentioned Heathrow, and because it's got zero emissions, this can actually work inside buildings as well, I guess.
Yes, it can. Yeah, we have them working in some of the centres at Heathrow. The majority of it is spent outside working in the grounds of Heathrow and around the perimeter roads. And it's all part of their drive to reduce emissions or offset some of their emissions that they're from an airline.
Yeah,
exactly.
And if we just take the basic bog standard vehicle before we add any fancy bits onto it, what does that retail at? What sort of price can you buy it for?
Just over 10,000. And bearing in mind that 2,000 of that is made up of batteries, it really comes in at a very similar price. And you're buying your fuel source up front.
Yes.
You know, you're buying your batteries, a couple of £1,000. So it's comparable with an Escort van.
And the battery life, 2 or more years?
It's early days. We have a 2-year warranty on them. We believe we'll get more. We believe 4. That's the way we're working on this.
And presumably, as battery technology improves and they get cheaper and more powerful, that can all be incorporated into the vehicle.
It can, and I think we're going to see huge leaps forward in the next couple of years. Lithium ion seems to be the way that everybody seems to be moving. America seems to be leading the market in this at the moment. Very expensive, but they're suggesting that in a couple of years' time, manufacturing will start to come in and lithium ion will start to become the accepted norm. And at that point, range will be increased, top speed will be increased, and I think we'll start to see electric vehicles become mainstream in a lot of ways.
You mentioned the top speed, and that is one of the aspects of electric vehicles. On G3, we looked at the Revo, which was a concept car which came in about a couple of years ago, and that had a top speed of 100 miles an hour, but that was very much just a concept. But normally, the top speeds of vehicles have been low. Is that partially also because of the way that the motor is made?
Yes, it is. And they're restricted. We have 30 miles an hour. We with a good wind, I think you could probably get 32, 33, but really 30 miles an hour. But it's ideal for London. I mean, it really is. That is the market.
It's a miracle if you can get that speed.
It is. But what we are hoping is that as the technology changes and we start moving into lighter body forms, lighter weight batteries, then we can start to increase that top speed and get up to the 40, 45 and manage to keep it economic, which is the big issue.
What's the cost-benefit analysis of one of these vehicles against, say, a bog-standard petrol engine?
Well, we have been compared, and we had an independent assessment of the vehicles, and they have suggested, based on a 5,000-mile running per annum, it would be £215.
That would be the saving per annum, basically.
Yeah, that was the total running cost per annum.
All right.
Total running cost. So pretty impressive, really.
What brought me to you was the sheer range of designs, the clever concepts that have been built into this one vehicle. Where can people have a look at all the designs? Where's the website?
The www.electruck.co.uk. There's a full gallery there where you can see a range of vehicles from coffee machines through to fruit and juices. You'll see our green hearse and cherry pickers. So, the full range is there.
And if you didn't get that down, don't worry. Just go to the usual address, bfbs.com/G3, and you can see the link there to Electruck and David Cormack. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm now about to demonstrate a most interesting device.
This is G3. BFBS.
Next on G3 is we follow our sort of, if you like, trip on the road. Everybody's talking about biodiesel. We're hearing about how farmers are growing different plants, not to eat now, but to make into fuel for us, and how we all are going to have to convert to biodiesel to save the environment and also to save us money. But where is biodiesel? How do you make biodiesel? On the phone, I've got somebody who's going to tell us. Chris Elvey is a director of a company called Ecotech Resources, and they not only make biodiesel, but they also sell domestic products to make your own biodiesel, which is a really clever idea. Welcome to the programme, Chris. How easy is it to make biodiesel products?
Well, it's basically schoolboy chemistry. We all forget what we learnt in the chemistry department when we were at school, but it's a straightforward principle, little bit of practice, and before you know it, you're actually manufacturing a fuel that you can run your diesels on.
Now, I've looked at it, and the domestic one, the basic sort of entry-level product, which makes 50 litres, which is enough probably for many people for about a week, could easily fit in the corner of the garage. It's not very large at all, is it?
No, it's a very, very small footprint area. It measures 70, centimetres by 70 centimetres. And you just need, you know, space for a bit of oil, a bit of methanol, and you've got everything there to actually manufacture your diesel.
Now, is it dangerous?
Some of the chemicals, you've got to be well aware of the chemicals you're using. Methanol is a flammable liquid, it's an alcohol. It's got a flash point of 11 degrees C, whereas petrol is a little bit worse, that's 7 degrees C.
Right.
And you've got to be aware of the sodium hydroxide, which is basically caustic soda.
Now, that's the stuff people use to bleach, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah. My mother used to use it for cleaning the drains.
Right, yes. So, we're going to tell people where the website is towards the end, but it just looks like making your own homemade wine, anyway. It's got a large chamber and a small chamber. And so, what's the procedure?
Well, the procedure is you fill the large vessel or chamber with sufficient oil to make a batch. You switch the heater on. It's got its own heater built in. It's not a problem. It only goes to 50 degrees centigrade. It's set at that. It can't go any higher. So there's no problem with it being a plastic tank. Some people fear more plastic tanks and heat, but 50 degrees C isn't a problem with that.
I mean, that's lower than bathwater almost, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you could make it at 20 degrees C, but you'd probably have to mix it for 2 days.
So, 50 degrees C is the optimum temperature, and then you plug it in the mains, and then what happens? It sort of stirs it all together, does it?
Well, there's a little pump at the bottom. The one, ETR100, has actually been developed direct from feedback from us. Customers have bought the 50, because what usually happens, they buy a machine, and within a week, they've made it for the first time, and then the next thing, the neighbour wants some.
Okay. So does it take a week to make it then, basically?
No. Overall, it takes about 24 hours.
Okay. So you can... we'll come to where you get the fuel, the basics from in a minute. But so basically, you source whatever it is you're going to get, and then 24 hours later, if you put 50 litres of chip fat oil in, do you get 50 litres of biodiesel out?
Yes.
Really? Oh.
Basically, that vessel that you're talking about, the entry-level one, it's the ETR50. We tend to make that in batches of 40-litre batches.
Okay.
Because you've got to leave a little bit for the top for the methanol to go in, which is 20%, which in that case is 8 litres.
But, I mean, many people's petrol tanks are about 40 litres. So,
yes. There's more than enough. But you've also got to remember that you've got to supply your own fuel tank and your wife's fuel tank and everybody else.
So already we're getting to the 100-litre one then, really, if we're going to do it properly. And as you say, people are going to come round saying, ooh, can I have some of your stuff, Chris?
Well, that's a favourite thing.
Yeah.
And we always warn people beforehand. I mean, it's quite legal, which is the main thing.
Yeah, because the government have announced that you can actually have, you can make 2,500 litres a year of your own, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, they can. Now, you know, because of the environmental push, the Chancellor has actually removed the taxation for anybody manufacturing their own fuel. which is fine, it's super, that.
Yeah. So, the cost then, we'll come to the cost of the unit at the end, and then we'll come to the cost of the main thing. What about the chemicals you've put in? How much is it going to cost that per litre for the bits you need to make your biodiesel?
For everything, the worst case scenario, excepting the cost of the oil, if you collect the oil from your local restaurant, then there's no cost on that.
Yeah.
And everything to manufacture it, from the methanol, from the caustic soda, from the electricity, from the water, everything costs top line of 15 pence a litre.
Whoa. Now, you may have to buy the fuel, but I mean, I'm just thinking about around the world, all the messes and cookhouses and things, and the amount of litres of chip fat they must throw away. So, in some cases, you can probably get the basic ingredient for free, can you?
Oh, yes, there's many places. In the UK, some collection companies are actually charging restaurants and mess houses and everything else to actually remove the waste oil. Whereas many people that's actually manufacturing their own fuel will go and obviously they'll take it away for nothing,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's a winner then.
Right.
Ultimately, it's recycling.
It is. So, you buy one of these, you do a deal with the cookhouse, and you take away all their used oil, and then in 24 hours you've made 50 litres or thereabouts from it. You put it in your car. Do all cars run, or can all cars run on biodiesel like this?
All the basic diesels, the older ones run a lot better than the newer ones, and the manufacturers are just a little bit standoffish, and for the main reason is they don't know the quality.
Right.
So, but inevitably, anybody that's manufacturing their own, before they'll put it in their own vehicle, they want the quality of that fuel to be better than what you can buy commercially.
Right.
So, it's realistically, you will find somebody that's making it domestically, you know, if it comes out crystal clear, if it has a smell of linseed oil or putty, and it pHs, with a little pH meter or the strips, you know, get it to a pH of 7, you know, that's fine.
Right. Now, does your, as you run your diesel car down the road, does it smell like a chip shop?
No, it is a different smell. There is people that do run the vehicles on used chip fat oil.
Right, yeah.
And that does have a smell of kebabs and fish and chips and all the rest of it. But because it's gone through a purifying process, it is a sweet smell. And
right.
It is very much different than conventional diesel. But it's not an offensive smell. It's quite a pleasant one.
And is it better for your car as well?
It's got very good lubricating qualities. For example, when we first went to ultra-low sulfur diesel, one or two of the manufacturers had problems with their diesel pump seizing up because sulfur being a natural lubricant.
Uh-huh.
Now, by using biodiesel, it replenishes any lubricity, and it's far, far better.
And if you had any concerns, if you were concerned about your car, can you mix your biodiesel with your ordinary fossil diesel?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Nowadays, a lot, we've got a target in the UK of a 5% blend. If you go to most of the outlets, they will, any diesel, any fossil diesel you buy, chances are it will already have a 5% blend of biodiesel in.
Oh, I see, already. Okay.
Already,
yeah.
And the next target is to go to 20% and so on and so forth.
Right, well, you've convinced me now that the 50-litre one is going to be too small for my use. So let's go for the 100-litre one. Now, the footprint of that in the back of the garage is not huge anyway, is it? It's just
no.
a little bit bigger plastic box, basically.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So
the main thing is, I mean, we have little plastic trays to sit them in, which are, if there's any drips or anything like that, it can soon be mopped up.
Right. Is there any smell in the garage? Supposing it's in the garage, is there any smell in the garage of, like, being next to a petrol station?
No.
Quite.
The main thing there is, because you're using an alcohol in the form of methanol,
right.
You need to have it in a well-ventilated area.
That's fair, yeah. No. And don't send the kids smoking when they're playing pool in the garage.
No, just keep your chemicals and everything locked up,
okay.
Out of the way of the kids and the dog and
yeah.
Everything.
Now, I know that as part of the package here in the UK, when people buy the units from you, they include a day's training where they go and watch you make it and then sort of learn how to do it. Is that compulsory or is that recommended, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, more recommended than compulsory. There's people out there that are very practically minded.
So if I would...
farmers and that, they're so practically minded, they can go straight from an instruction, because you get an instruction manual.
Right,
with it.
Right. Okay, so I'm not going to have the smaller one, I'm going to have the 100 litre, because that's how much I'm going to need for the wife's car and the friend next door and things. And how much is that going to cost me to buy the unit to make my own diesel?
The 100 litre one is $13.95 plus Uncle Gordon's tax, unfortunately.
Okay. So, say about £1,500, give or take
yeah.
a bit, yeah. Now, I'll just do some quick mental calculations. That means, with an average family, that'll be paid for within a year, won't it, just about?
Oh, yes. Well before that. I think it's 26 mixes and it's paid for itself.
Right. Okay. So, basically, 9 months in and your unit's paid for and you're running your car at about 12, 15p a litre.
Yes.
Amazing. And it's good for the environment, too.
Well, most people, I mean, we're all environmentally conscious nowadays because of the environment, but most people like the idea because it's more cost-effective.
Where can people go and find out more about the biodiesel things from your website? Where is it?
Our website is www.etruk.com.
which is the Ecotech Resource Basic. That's where
Ecotech
the ET.
Ecotech Resource. The
site's really good. It's got lots of explanations of how the whole thing works and prices and all the different products. Because you do commercial ones as well, so it could well be that the military might think, oh, that's a good idea, because we can actually do it commercially and make money that way. I think it's a superb idea, and I'm well impressed by the whole concept of it. And Chris Elvey, thank you so much for your time on G3 today.
Not a problem, sir. Thank you very much.
This is G3.
BFBS.
And finally on Games, Gadgets and Gizmos on our Transport Edition, well, we've all been a bit green so far, looking at electric vehicles and then how to make your own biodiesel. Let's completely turn that around now and let's go to meet Nick Mead of a company called Tanks A Lot, because he specialises in tanks. Tanks for driving, tanks for having fun in, but he's done something different now and he's converted a tank into a limousine for weddings and special events. And I think that's definitely worthy of talking about. Nick, welcome to G3. What gave you the idea of converting a tank into a wedding limo?
Well, just to upset all these fire engine and Humvee drivers, really. Anything to upset. It's not one tank, it's two 432s welded together.
Two tanks welded together?
To get the length, so it's properly stretched. I've got about 28 432s, and one of a Berlin turret, which is a bit like a Scorpion or Scimitar turret. That fits very nicely on the top, and it's all in white with, well, it looks like UN livery, but when you get nearer, the U and the N stands for under new management. And blue neons underneath, you know, everything you need.
But anybody who's been in a tank knows they're not the easiest things to get in and out of, so you must
No, you've got a nice big back door on a 432.
Ah, of course, yes.
Stuffing the bride up into the turret is always insane. You have to go in underneath her and kind of wake her up.
Yeah, so they're going through the big back door.
Yeah.
And what sort of view do they have? Because, again, when you're inside a tank, you don't get much of a view normally.
We've got two back doors, sort of, the mortar hatches. I've got two sets of mortar hatches, and the front mortar hatches take the turret, but I can still open up the rear mortar hatches. And we've got this, it's all trimmed out nice, but it's got a kind of stage goes in there. We did a wedding for a guy called Gary, who just come back from Iraq about 3 weeks ago, and he's one of the Queen's buglers, and the other Queen's buglers come along, stood on the little stage, and they were like bugling him out the back as all in the black uniforms as we rattled off from the registry office.
Now the thing is, because the miles per gallon on a tank is not marvellous, so presumably you've got to put it on a low loader to get to the venue, have you?
Well, it's not the fuel, to be honest. They're not terribly long-legged anyway. You'd wear your tracks out and it just takes a long time, so we generally low load them to the area and then but fuel is not really an issue. We run them on a mixture of petrol and diesel, which we get for free. They're a multi-fuel engine. As long as you've got, say, 60, 70% diesel in it, then it'll love it. But where people put the wrong fuel in the car, this stuff's always available for free.
Now, you've been running Tanks A Lot for quite a while.
Oh, 15 years.
You do a lot of things ranging from film and TV hire to driver...
Well, it's really tank driving days.
Right.
I mean, that's corporate or private vouchers. We're pretty famous for what we call the Full Monty voucher, where people come from all over the world to drive a selection of vehicles, shoot a selection of things, and then the winner of the day runs over a car. And from that, it's gone on. We do a service called Crush a Car, where you can just buy a car crusher and come up, drive a 432... probably a Lance, and then Bosch over a car in a Chieftain. When we can't get enough cars, which did happen a little while ago, we invented this thing called Swim a Russian Tank, and you drive a couple of vehicles, then you have a go at swimming a thing called a Grozdilka, which is this enormous Russian. We've got seven of them. They look like canal barges on tracks with big, big turrets on them, and they swim beautifully.
Now, it sounds like your farm is not going to be a normal kind of farm, then, is it?
No, we've got a bit of barley, but if our courses get a bit muddy, we just go straight through the hedge, straight through the barley, and do another course. We don't give a damn. At the end of the day, it's tanks, tanks, tanks. Everything else is expendable.
Now you're...
No tenants, no horses, just tanks. Hundreds
right.
of them.
Are you ex-service yourself, Nick?
Salvation Army.
Salvation Army,
yeah.
Right. But obviously, looking at your website, you actually use a lot of the guys who either are ex or still in.
I do, yes. They kind of find me. Sometimes they're a bit hard on the vehicles. If I'm going to lose a track in a day, it's always going to be an ex-army bloke messing around rather than a normal civilian guy who probably came on the day, had a wonderful time, and said, God, I'd love a set part-time job here. And I said, well, you know, you've got a big smile, you're in, mate. Try and find him some sort of uniform so he looks pretty smart, and a bit of training, and yeah, they can do it our way.
Now,
never turn in reverse. Don't throw your tracks off then.
No, the reason why I called you is because of the limo hire. What gave you the idea for actually doing it in the first place?
Years ago, I was in the meat trade, and we were always mega busy at Christmas. And although I've had this business now for 15 years, I still can't get used to not being mega busy at Christmas. And I said to me blokes, I'm going to cut 2 432s in half, weld them together and make a limousine for hen parties and stag do's and film premieres and all this kind of stuff and weddings. And they all laughed at me. And as soon as someone laughs at me, I think, right, got to do it now, you bastard. So I started sawing one, cutting one in half.
Which means the tracks are going to be a different length as well, then?
Yeah, we just add a few more links in. Yeah. I think it takes 137 links a side instead of 87. A lot of people said it would never turn.
Does it handle better or the same?
Well,
or?
A lot of people said it would never turn, and the tracks had come off when I went around a corner and all this. But and I did mean to do some tests as I went along it, building it. But to be honest, it was very muddy Christmas time. And first of all, I kind of cut the two halves in half, offered them up together. And in the end, I'd done everything, right down the transfers and everything was on it before I tried to drive it. And you know what? It's a pussycat. The only difference between that and a normal 432 is as you get faster, it doesn't wander because it's long.
So
it does take more effort to get it round the corner, but I always get it round.
Right.
But the difference is when I go up the road on a normal 432, you're always pulling the right lever, left lever, right lever, left. You're always correcting. And also, they pull badly to the left because of the normal camber on the road to make the water run off the road. They kind of put a tilt on it. But when I made the stretch, I bent it a little bit. It's slightly bent to the right-hand side.
Designed for an English road.
I let go of the levers, floor it, and it just goes.
It sounds huge fun. Yeah. Now, it's obviously not going to be cheap, is it?
No, it's not really cheap, no. I wish it was.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's cheap because we get withdrawal symptoms for not taking it out.
Right.
Occasionally we do a cheap wedding. We did actually do one locally, and I think we did probably 35 miles on the road in the end, which is madness, really,
yeah.
Because you get a lot of track wear and that.
But roughly, if I called up and said, Nick, I'd like to rent the tank limo.
Well, for someone who's in the forces, I mean, if we get someone like, is that Die Hard bloke or someone like this for his film premiere, yeah, we're going to bend him over and we're going to charge him a lot of money.
Right.
But for a normal person, for his wedding, I would like to think I could do it for about £1,500, £2,000. I mean, if I've got to take it to Scotland, then my blokes are going to have a lot of downtime.
That's
and
true.
I've got to pay him for that.
Yeah.
So reckon on somewhere 1,500, 2 grand, plus the low loader. And a low loader, you can get a long way for 400-500 quid.
That's very true. If people want to learn more about not just the tank limo hire, but all the other great things that you do, where's the website they can go and look at,
Well,
Nick?
My website is tanksalot.co.uk. That's one word. But there's a lot of nudity on it, so perhaps they shouldn't be looking. Mind you, a young man I know, Jamie Clark, who's out there in Afghanistan at the moment, he's into a bit of glamour, so he wouldn't mind looking at my website.
Jamie, if you're listening, you'll know exactly where the website is, because of course you work with Nick some of the time. Nick,
yeah.
It's been great to have you on the show. If you didn't get that written down, don't worry, bfbs.com/g3. You can follow the links to Tanks a Lot and see all the things they do and some of the glamour on there. Nick Mead of Tanks a Lot, thanks a lot for being on the programme this month.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
And that's it for G3 for the month of August. What with electric vehicles, biodiesel and two tanks welded together and painted white, a pretty mixed programme. Don't forget, you can find out more about the people we've spoken to and the things we've spoken about on the G3 website at bfbs.com/G3. That's letter G, number 3. Any questions about the programme? Great to hear from you wherever you are in the world. And that is dave.raven@bfbs.com. And don't forget, of course, it's also a podcast. If you'd like to subscribe once a month, it's totally free. Go to iTunes, type in G3, and then every month, every time there's a new programme, it will appear on your PC. Until the September edition, which comes from Earl's Court and the show called Top Draw. Hope you've enjoyed the show this month, and I'll talk to you in 4 weeks' time. From me, Dave Raven, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Gadget. 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 Audio output. Terminate, automatic.